Sunday Morning's Thoroughbred Magazine. For the next hour, we're talking horses. Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Talking Horses. Hope you're enjoying the long weekend. Certainly spoilt for sport, with Moonee Valley hosting the Group 1 Moya Stakes meeting on Grand Final Eve. What a win by She Will Reign. More on that shortly. Also on the show, we talk to the author of the latest racing book to hit the shelves, Sport of Queens, which focuses on the backstory of women who have made their way in racing, from jockeys to journalists and trainers. We will also have a preview of the Arc de Triomphe with Ron Flatter, and something a bit different, a young boy from the Northern Territory who made it all the way to the Australian Interschool Equestrian Championships on the back of a Brumby pony. His incredible story later on the show. But first, I caught up with Scott Darby after the breathtaking win of She Will Reign in the Group 1 feature at the Valley on Friday night.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
It was some win from the Golden Slipper winning filly She Will Reign in the Group 1 feature at the Valley on Friday night. Scott Darby from Darby Racing joining us first up on the program this morning. Scott, how's the heart rate?
It's tired, very, very tired, but exuberant. Yeah, no, fantastic.
That's one of the most thrilling wins we've seen at the Valley in a long time.
Look, I'm still coming to terms with it. Like, at the after 300 metres, I kind of resigned myself that it was all over. They were winning on pace. They were leading. We were back. We were off the bit. And I thought, wow, gee, we're gone.
Never write a filly like her off. She's got so much determination when it comes to hitting the line.
I should know better. Ben Mellum, her regular rider, rang me after the race and congratulated me. He said, I can't believe she won. She was absolutely off the bit. He was following her on Malaguera and said she was fishtailing all the way around Moonee Valley. And when she hit the straight, she hit the right leg and she just went into overdrive. It was incredible.
Because it's tough, isn't it, the short course at the Valley for horses that aren't accustomed to the course or necessarily suited?
I said to a number of people leading up to this race, I'm more concerned about this run than the Everest. The Everest were back at Randwick, long straight, 1,200, 1,000 metres, under lights, Moonee Valley, never seen the circuit before. There was a lot of hurdles to overcome, but unbelievable. She has exceeded all expectations.
It was a career-defining win for her and her first since the Golden Slipper. She's had that break. And how is she furnished overall? I've seen her on the television screens only, but up close and personal, how does she look to have developed since the Slipper?
Yeah, it was really important that she did furnish. Not an overly big filly, but she put on 40 kilos of racing weight in a spell. I hadn't seen a lot of her leading up to this race, so it was great to get there last night. And the first shot I saw of her before being saddled was that alert, bright, ready to go filly, and it gave me great confidence. But still, very, very wary of Moonee Valley and the big rise in class. So, look, I'm struggling to describe the feeling that we're going through at the moment for a winning.
So onwards and upwards now, further up the mountain, if you like, to the Everest. And that sort of performance is going to put her right in contention, you think?
Absolutely. I definitely went on record very cautious about this race, but I'm really confident about the Everest. It might sound funny, it's such a hard race, but I really feel what we saw last night, and it's given me great confidence going to that race, because I always felt down the track she's going to be more a 12, 14, 16, even 100-metre horse in the autumn. I think the 1,200 on the Everest, you're going to need that 1,400-metre horse to win that. And I think we've got the filly that can relax, find the line. I'm certainly going to go in with a lot more confidence after last night.
Not bad for a $20,000 purchase to now be one of the front runners for Australia's richest race on turf.
Crazy stuff. Crazy to think she was only $20,000. I mean, we certainly thought she was worth a lot more at the sales. But, look, I suppose, as they say, they don't know their price tag, and she's certainly worth a lot more than that now.
Mm. And how are you all feeling personally, you and the band of owners?
The owners are off the tree. They're just mental. They're crazy. They're just having the ride of life. It's changing their lives. It's one of the best advertisements to get into racing for not a lot of money. It happens all the time. It's, you know, it's happening at the top end. It's happening at the bottom end. And it's just fantastic to see so many owners from all walks of life. You know, look, we've got owners that are struggling with, you know, been through cancer and on their last legs and all sorts of things. They're business owners, and seeing the smiles and it's changing their lives and their family, friends, and, yeah, look, it hasn't stopped yet, so hopefully it keeps going.
Mm. And for those that have really been struggling, especially with health, has this been a good tonic for them?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, there's a couple in the horse from Tasmania that have been doing a little bit tough, and they're going to try and get up to the Everest, and they haven't been totally involved with She Will Reign along the way because of health issues, and I'm really hoping this will give them the great kick along they deserve.
Yeah. So after the win at the Valley, her record now stands at 5 wins and a second placing from only 6 starts, and her career earnings are nudging $3 million.
Yeah, crazy. Unbelievable. Like, growing up in the industry and working as a strapper early on and being in business, you only dreamed of having runners in the slipper and different things, but to see a filly of this calibre and not knowing exactly where the ceiling is, it's absolutely mind-blowing. So something that's certainly keeping us at Derby Racing on our toes, and, yeah, what do you say?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, not much more to say, is there? What about the impact that she's had on your business since the slipper win? We spoke to you on the program the morning after, and it was something we discussed, that, you know, the likelihood was that that high-profile race win would help your business. Has it? And what sort of impact do you feel that it has had in terms of, you know, the yearling sales season and things like that?
Yeah, no doubt. Yankee Rose, firstly, kicked us right off, but She Will Reign sort of flying the flag now. And there's no doubt, there's, like we said before, there's so many people out there that think it's now attainable to, you know, not spend a great deal of money and get into one of these horses that can race in these big races. Not only race and compete, but win. I think that's the most important thing. You see so many horses, you get in these races at 100-1 or 50-1, but you can actually win them for not a lot of outlay. So it's certainly onwards and upwards, and business is certainly booming, that's for sure.
Well, that's good to hear. It's so important that racing offers these lower-level, entry-level opportunities to get involved with horses, and look what this journey's done for some people. It's changed their lives significantly.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the beauty about the game. That's what I've loved about the game. It doesn't matter if you've had whether you're a jockey, trainer, syndicator, and you've had a string of outs and you're down on your luck, it only takes one to turn it around. For an owner, they could be going through, you know, horses that aren't showing a lot for quite some time. But, the game can turn around very quickly, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And you know, at all sorts of levels, they can reach the top. It's amazing. It's exciting, really.
Very much so. So what's the plan from this point on? When does she head back up the Hume Highway?
She's going to head up as soon as possible. She pulled up terrific this morning, according to Gary. Licked the tin last night. And I think she's going to head up today, if not tomorrow morning. Get her back in her own box as soon as possible. She'll head to the Everest, and we'll assess from the Everest. There is a couple of whispers she may race after the Everest, but we'll get through that race first.
Yes, climb that mountain, so to speak, first.
Absolutely. We've got to find a jockey first.
okay. So no doubt there's been plenty of phone calls.
Yeah, look, it seems to be pretty much coming down to Corey Brown, Glenn Boss. You know, there's not a lot that can make the 51 kilos. Mm. Even there's a whisper that Ventura McAvoy may look to jump ship, but we'll wait and see what happens there. A lot to be played out this week.
Glenn Boss, of course, riding in Singapore at the moment. He's always a safe bet when it comes to the big races. Big race jockey than Bossy, is there?
No, I don't think so. You know, no matter how he's riding at the time, he seems to lift when it comes to the Group 1s. He's a bit of a freak when it comes to that. Quite clear, remember, he's went on Sebring in the slipper, come from nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exciting times for you, Scott. It's been wonderful to share the journey with you on the program, and all the best of luck in the next crucial period until the Everest, which would be something if you could pull that off.
Yeah, really much appreciated, Joe, and hopefully the dream can continue.
And I really hope that the people involved with the horse that are suffering ill health can make it to the race day too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's Scott Darby from Darby Racing. They have a superstar, don't they, in She Will Reign, now headed for the Everest. Sydney hosted one of its biggest days of the year yesterday at Randwick, all bar one of the races, Black Type. The opener was the Breeders' Plate, a listed event over 1,000 metres, won by Chris Waller's two-year-old colt Performer. He's a son of Exceed and Excel out of a Snippets mare, Gavroche. Sold at the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sale for $450,000. He's a relation to winners Bell Rain, Bell Sprinter and Street Boy. The listed Jim Crack Stakes over 1,000 metres, won by Snowden Racing's filly Satin Slipper. She's a daughter of Piero out of a Flying Spur mare, Satin Shoes. The listed Dulcify Quality over the mile and Godolphin's Ataraxia Successful, a three-year-old colt by Teofilo out of a Quest for Fame mare, Insouciance. A relation to many winners, including Boredom, Careless, Complacent, Malaise, Nonchalance, Offhanded, Paniolo, Tactless and Tailwind. The Group 2 Hill Stakes over 1,800 metres and Gary Moore's classic uniform Too Good, a five-year-old gelding by Almaher out of a Canny Ladmare Pyrotechnics. Sold through the 2014 Inglis Australian Easter yearling sale for $170,000. He's a relation to a winner, Roquessa. The Group 1 Flight Stakes for the fillies over a mile and Elise brought up Sepoy's first Australian Group 1 winner. A filly out of an Exceed and Excel mare, Asayura. She's a relation to some very good horses, including Astern, Marrakesh and Mogador. The Group 2 Premier Stakes over 1,200 metres and Benjamin Smith's In Her Time, five-year-old daughter of Time Thief, the winner, out of a Zetative mare, Hell It's Hot, was passed in at the 2014 Inglis Classic yearling sale after being placed in the summer book there. The Group 1 Epsom Handicap, the famed mile at Randwick, won by Happy Clapper for Patrick Webster, a very popular win. He's a seven-year-old gelding by Teofilo out of an Encosta Delago mare, Busking, not offered at the yearling sales, Happy Clapper. Winning relations include Gig, On the Fiddle, Santana, Street Art and White Coffee. The Group 1 Metropolitan, over 2,400 metres, and Foundry was successful, an eight-year-old gelding by Galileo out of a Dixieland band mare, Sharp Lisa. And that's a look at racing at Randwick yesterday on Epsom Day. Terrific afternoon of racing. And we had a superb night of racing on Friday at the Valley. The undercard on Moya Stakes night included the Group 3 Scarborough over 1,200 metres, won by Hudson, a daughter of I Am Invincible, out of a Reset mare Set to Unleash. The Group 3 JRA Cup over the Cox Plate trip, John Snow successful, a four-year-old entire by Ifraj out of an O'Reilly mare, Orinda. Sold for just $65,000 through the 2015 New Zealand Bloodstock Select yearling sale. The Group 2 Zoostar Stock Stakes over the mile and I Am a Star, the winner, a four-year-old mare by I Am Invincible out of a Dixieland band mare, Star Band. He was sold at the 2015 Inglis Classic yearling sale through the summer book for just $40,000, proving a bargain buy, isn't he? Winning relations include Band on the Run and Pulsar. the Group 1 feature, the Moyer Stakes over 1,000 metres. A memorable outcome here, She Will Rain, coming from well back in the field to win. The daughter of Manhattan Rain cost just $20,000 at the 2016 Inglis Classic yearling sale. She's out of a charge forward mare, Courgette, and she's now on to the Everest. The Group 2 Stud Stakes over the mile, and it was Team Hawk's Showtime successful after a front-running display. He's a colt by Snitzel out of a Timber Country mare, Fliday, sold at the 2016 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sale for $1.1 million. Winning relations include Phantom Queen, Rush, Surf Poet and Sweet Idea.
Joe, this is our 10th year covering the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, but for the second year on the trot, we are not in Paris. At least not for this race. Not this year, because of the grandstand redevelopment at Longchamp. So we are again at Chantilly, about an hour's train ride north of the capital. But some things never change around here, wherever the Arc is run. Over the past decade, either three-year-olds or fillies have dominated the Arc. And this year, it figures to be a three-year-old filly, ridden by Frankie Dettori.
Now Frankie says go on the filly Enable, and is followed through by Ulysses in second place, and Enable powers clear of Ulysses. Ulysses trying to bridge the gap. They run down to the final furlong. Enable on the far side, Ulysses second, then Idaho running on. It's Enable by three lengths inside the final furlong here. Ulysses can make no further impression, and this fabulous filly, a dual oaks winner, and now Enable as the King George. And a fifth win for Frankie Dettori. Ulysses and Idaho, second and third.
That was Enable's win from Ulysses in the July running of the King George at Ascot. Now she's an even money favorite here in European markets to win the Arc for trainer John Gosden, who is emphatic about just how good Enable is.
Every mile and a half, she's the best filly I've ever trained, probably. Along, and Takruda would be right there, too. She was exceptional as well, both of them. But she's a very, very talented filly. We know on Good to Firm and Good she's a brilliant filly, but we've never run on Good to Soft, let alone when the rain suddenly comes. What I think at the head of the straight, Frankie's up there travelling. He thought, I'm on the best one. I'm not going to get boxed in. I'm not going to get in trouble. Ulysses made a wonderful run, but she's an exceptional filly, and she's proved she can handle any conditions.
Enable has won her last five races, four of them Group 1s at 2,400 metres, the distance of the Arc. When she beat the boys in the King George, her closest pursuer was the four-year-old colt Ulysses. Could this be deja vu this weekend? Her closest pursuer among punters over here is Ulysses. He's a $9 second choice, just ahead of $10 Winter, a three-year-old filly that is one of five runners in the Arc for Aidan O'Brien. You'll remember O'Brien swept the top three places when Found was a winner last year. Third that day was another one of O'Brien's runners here at the weekend, Order of St. George, which is bypassing the Melbourne Cup to race here again, perhaps as a pace setter for the other Coolmore horses. Also in the field of 18, a horse that blew his start in his last race, finishing fifth in a Group 2 race at Deauville, but otherwise a dual French Classic winner. He is Bramato. He'll be jumping at odds of about $17, trained by J.C. Roget and ridden by Christian DeMiro. In his third year based here in northern France, the native of Italy chatted with us at St. Cloud earlier this week about Bramato.
Yeah, Bramato, last time he worked very good. He looks like he's come back like the former from the Jockey Club. Mm-hmm. So now we see Sunday.
Yeah, he won four in a row before that last race at Deauville in August. What happened in that race?
It was bad race, one behind another one. So it was last, and it's too difficult to come back from behind in Deauville. In Chantilly, there is more chance to come back, but in Deauville, it's too short the straight.
Yeah, and that was only, I mean, obviously that one was 2,000 meters. He's never gone 2,400. I mean, is that, what do you think about his chances of being able to stay the distance?
I think so the distance is not a problem, because in the Jockey Club it was 2,100 meters, and we come from all the time outside, so, and from last far, he quick, so I think so the distance is not a problem.
I would imagine you don't want to be racing wide in the Arc.
Yeah, of course, but you know it's difficult horse to ride, So it's him, he decide what he do. So me, I just check to find the room and follow the best chance in the race. So Enable and Ulises is inside to me, and I just check.
Now, when you look at this race, I mean, you know, it's hard to get a real idea of where the pace will be, maybe order of St. George. We know Enable's going to be fairly forward place. We know Ulises is going to come from far back as well. Where do you see yourself in all of this?
I rode this race last year with a 1 foot in even. It's kind of race every time there is fast pace, so we can come back from behind. So if you can follow the best horse, it's better. But, you know, the pace is fast, and then you need just check and where is better to go.
What about with the fact that you have that uphill for about 600 meters before that last 200? How does that make this race unique, and how does it fit all these horses?
Yeah, for this, I say before, it's better in Chantilly to come back, because if you make fast pace, last 2 furlong is uphill, so it's difficult to arrive just at the end. So it's better reserve the energy from the last stretch.
And just in terms of whether it's wet, are you concerned about that?
Yeah, he ran in all the ground, so he win in every ground, everything. So Chantilly he loved. He win 2 times, the Jockey Club and the Prix Fontainebleau, so we'll see Sunday.
Christian DeMuro, good luck on your ride with Bramateau tomorrow. Safe ride, too, and thanks for your time here on RSN 927.
Thank you so much.
One horse conspicuous by his absence from the arc is Enable's stablemate, Cracksman. Expected to be pointed here after winning on this course last month in the Prix Niel, Gosden surprisingly announced last week that Cracksman would instead be pointed to the British Champion Stakes in 3 weeks' time at Ascot. Of course, the weather will have a lot to say about who wins the Arc. Forecasters predict overnight rain here at Chantilly. A day ahead of the big race, the course rated a 3.4 good to soft in European terms, so we could end up seeing softer conditions on the day. Against that backdrop, we had a chat at nearby Saint-Cloud on Friday with an icon of this race. 7-time mark-winning trainer André Fabbe has 3 runners going in this year's race, led at least in the odds by Cloth of Stars. Very encouraging second in the Prix Foix. Does that give you encouragement going into Sunday's race?
Absolutely. It's been his target since the beginning of the year. He won 3 races early, and then I decided to give him a break until the prep race, so everything goes to plan. The only thing that I didn't reckon was the opposition that was so good.
We'll get to that in just a moment. I just want to touch on your other runners. You're also going to have Plumatic in here, second at Maison Lafitte 2 weeks ago in a Group 3, but only 2,000 meters. Do you think he can get the 2,400?
Absolutely. He will be improved by the extra 2 furlongs. He would have won easily next time with an extra few strides. So he's a well-bred horse. He's bred for this, and he works well, and he's going to gain some experience. He'll stay at 4. He's going to run a good race.
And in terms of Doha Dream, second at Deauville in a Group 2 and a Group 3 back in August, a long shot on the board. How do you look at his role in this race?
He's a nice, consistent horse who never runs a bad race. And with the soft ground, he ought to take a chance. He's going to be close.
Well, there you mentioned the soft ground. How much do you want to see it rain for these 3 horses? Which one do you think maybe the softer ground favors among the 3?
I think all 3 they will handle it very well if it rains a bit.
In terms of Enable, I mean, we've seen her. She's gotten over various kinds of ground. Ulises probably going to come from far behind. How do you look at the race with those 2 and maybe even order St. George up front?
I have no idea. I hope there will be a really strong pace in the race, you know, that to avoid us. It's quite a messy race course in Chantilly, so if there's a lot of pace, it's going to be okay. If there's no pace, many horses get in trouble.
Did we learn anything last year from the Arc being a Chantilly that we can apply this year that maybe we didn't know before?
We learned that we're happy to go back to Longchamp.
Well, not before next year. André Fabbe with a money line to close that interview. Thanks so much for your time here on RSN 927. A couple other noteworthy horses in the Arc. The German runner Chingis Secret has been bet down to around $13 here in Europe, largely on the strength of the rainy forecast and thanks to his recent wins on soft and heavy going. Then there is Satono Diamond. which has drifted to $26. In the 95 previous runnings of the Ark, never has a horse from outside Europe won it. Satono Diamond is the latest runner from Japan to try to break through. Mind you, Japan has had some close calls before, most recently flirting with victory when Orfev appeared to have the Ark won 5 years ago, only to veer hard toward the rail under Christophe Soumillon and give up the lead late to Solomia. Expectations will be much lower for Satono Diamond, so who knows? Maybe he'll sneak up on everyone and steal this. Whatever the weather overnight, the Ark will be run a little after 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. You will hear it here on RSN 927. And Joe, that's how it looks from Chantilly. Au revoir.
A new book is about to hit the shelves. Sport of Queens, Women in Australian Horse Racing. And its author, Shane McNally, joins us on Talking Horses. Hi, Shane.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, gender equality in sport is certainly a hot issue of the current time, and we're seeing that in the Women's League of the AFL being pushed very much over the past 12 to 18 months. And I guess what it raises is issues around gender equality in other sports, and your focus has been on horse racing.
Yeah, well, it does seem timely with the AFL push, but I mean, this book... I wrote the first chapter of this in 2006, and then I tried publishers, and nobody was interested. And really, when Michelle Payne won the Cup, suddenly there was interest, and then a publisher that was interested dropped it again. So it was one of those ones that was hard to get people interested for a while. I think it's changed the last 12 months quite strongly, and Melbourne Books came on board. But it just shows you, I mean, I actually had a publisher many years ago saying, I don't think anybody will be interested in it. And I found that a bizarre thing, because I was quite sure. Surely women would be interested at least in the women in Australian horse racing. Yeah.
So when you challenged them as to why they didn't think there would be any interest, what did they say?
Really, they didn't give much of an explanation. It's just that we don't, you know, we're publishers. I won't mention the publisher, this particular one, but they said we do sports books and we don't think this would sell. And I thought, well, you do books on captains of every club and that sort of, you know, these sorts of things that are very narrow markets, although people from those clubs feverishly buy them. But I just thought you would have a captive market here. A couple of people said to me, isn't that a narrow market, women in horse racing? And I thought, well, personally, they didn't know how big horse racing is. And the other thing is that whether they think it's narrow or not, most women who have battled in horse racing would appreciate the book, probably be candidates to buy it. So I thought, I thought there was a readership there for sure.
And how candid have some of the guest interviews been?
They've been very good. I mean, I've got the book's in two parts. The first part is, what are we looking at, 12 chapters. Basically, with, you know, looking at the history and the present of Australian horse racing. And then the second part is a group of particular interviews with women in the business. And they include Gay Waterhouse, Claire Lindop, you know, Michelle Payne, Denise Martin, Victoria Shaw, the race caller. There's different levels. I mean, Gay Waterhouse, very business as usual. Very good interview, though. She's always giving of a time. Claire Lindop's great, but I've known her for a lot of years. Victoria Shaw's a fantastic interview. She's probably made the odd enemy. She's quite aggressive on it. But as I was interviewing her, I found myself nodding my head all the time, going, yep, I know exactly. You know, I find it remarkable that a good race caller is still working a day job as well as race calling. When you look at the amount of men that cover bush meetings, and you know, I think Victoria said she doesn't argue that she's the best race caller in Australia, but although she's pretty good, I might add. But when you look at some race calls around the country, it's got to be a gender thing if she's not getting the job. It just has to be, because she's clearly a lot better than some of them. So yeah, they were fairly giving of their time. I disappointingly had a couple of people that I was going to put in the back part of the book who just said no. And one of them surprised me. I actually rang them about three times, fairly prominent businesswoman, and I just got a no, not interested, not interested. I thought I'd better stop this before I make a nuisance of myself, but I thought maybe they didn't understand, because I thought, well, they, of course, you know, I said, look, it's a 10-minute interview. It's not going to be that long, maybe 20 minutes. And they just straight out said, not interested. So I got a few women, too, not just men, you know, so they, you know, that weren't interested, but generally very favourable.
I wonder why you got the knock back there. There was obviously not much of an explanation given, apart from a short, sharp answer of not being interested. But what would you think was the theory behind that for that person?
I don't know. I mean, I've racked my brain over that one. Maybe she doesn't know me. I'm based in South Australia, although I'm a fairly experienced racing journalist. Look, she's a very busy person, but I've said this to politicians over the years when I've interviewed them for stories. You know, I'll take five, depending on what you've got, we can sit down and have a coffee and take an hour, or if you're really busy, you can get a lot of information from someone in 5 or 6 minutes. So yeah, I just eventually let it go. But that was funny. I also found that a couple of women in racing clubs, I found one of them was actually a little bit embarrassed, I thought, because the race club took over and provided information for her and on her behalf. And I found that actually quite sexist, to be honest. And, you know, like, I thought, well, I just want to speak to the woman. You know, so she seemed a bit embarrassed. But generally it was positive, you know, but you get the odd hiccup along the way. And as I say, with a couple of women that did pull out of it, and one of them I had no doubt would be in it, you know, it made it awkward, a bit of a scramble at the end. Like, well, I've got to make up some pages here because I was sort of careless.
Well, all challenges aside then, you've managed to assemble some fantastic people to share their story and journey in racing. What have been some of the highlights, stories that you've been able to document?
Well, it's becoming increasingly documented, the Wilhelmina Smith situation. Obviously, I didn't speak to her. She's long, long passed away. But this is the now legendary jockey who rode as a man in the 1940s and 50s in Queensland. And and it was a sad life because she nobody knew she was a man. They just, well, probably back in those days, the general consensus was she was an effeminate, nobody knew she was a woman. She was an effeminate man, and back in those days, that wasn't well accepted, and they just left him alone, if you like. To the point that she fell badly one time, and the fellow jockey jumped off, but tried to basically undress her to help her, and she stopped them. And I don't think it was out of modesty; I don't want you to know that I'm a woman. So yeah, there was that. I mean, I spoke to Pam O'Neill, the great Brisbane jockey, who was one of the real pioneers of women in Australian horse racing. She was riding track work better than most men at the time, and had to, I think, I'd have to go through the book again, but I think she then had to prove herself in a series of barrier trials, even though she'd ridden many trials over the years. They needed proof again that she could ride, and I thought it was one rule for men, one for women there. Spoke to Linda Jones, the groundbreaking New Zealand jockey who came to Australia in the late 70s, and I actually opened the book with it. I talk about the fact that Linda Jones came to Adelaide. The jockeys did not take her seriously. They let her get away with a lead in front, and I think I describe it quite well. They said, you know, and I've spoken to jockeys about this over the years, that, you know, when she misjudges the pace, we'll grab her on the home turn. And I think I said, only she didn't, they couldn't. I mean, that's the fact. She won this Group 3 race at Adelaide, and it was the first picture race won in Australia by a woman rider. You know, there are others, of course. Marie Linden came out to Australia and was an outstanding rider. I think she was a classic case of paying the price. She rode a horse called Argonaut Style in the Melbourne Cup. Now, I thought she wasn't one of her best rides. I think she was an outstanding jockey. But I've since learnt that the horse was playing up badly, sweating up terribly, and was very fractious before the start. It was hard to get it to do anything, and it ran 23rd or something. Now, she never got another ride in the race. Now, if that had been any man, that had just gone, you had a bad horse or you rode a bad race, whatever it was. She was judged on that seemingly forever. So I think that's the problems that women have had to encounter over the years. Mm. I also look at the Gay Waterhouse. Sorry, go on.
Go on, yes.
Oh, the Gay Waterhouse situation with them. And I've always had a strong opinion on this, that, you know, she was denied for a lot of years the trainer's licence. You know, because of the Robbie Waterhouse Fine Cotton situation, and I don't think that would have happened to a man whose wife was in a similar situation. You know, I make a case in it, and I'll stand by this. Gay Waterhouse could have taught most men how to train before she was a trainer. I mean, she'd run Colour Quad. She was the assistant to one of the greatest horse trainers ever in the world, in Tommy Smith. To suggest that she had to, you know, that she couldn't get a license, I found ridiculous. She's a bit philosophical about it now. She didn't agree with it, but Gay's attitude to most things, and you've met her many times, I'm sure, is just, well, can't help that, let's get on with it. And she's a great interview, of course. Claire Lindop, fantastic in it. We have a situation there where she won the Victoria Derby on Rebel Raider, and two or three years later, taken off. What's the horse? Southern. I've gone blank. Southern. I can't remember.
The mare that won the Caulfield Cup.
Yeah, the mare that won the Caulfield Cup. I've just gone blank, but a very good mare. She got taken off. Craig Williams rode. Craig Williams rode a line of a race, so you can't really make the argument. Craig won it. I know Claire wasn't happy about it. I spoke to Leon McDonald recently for a different thing. I was just doing a story for a magazine, and he said, look, I had to let it go eventually. I started to really annoy the owners. He was quite angry that they didn't keep Claire on the horse. Now, Claire's a champion jockey in Adelaide. I think she'd already clearly won a premiership at that point. She'd already won a Group 1 in Melbourne. You know, apparently some owners didn't want her on, and they own the horse, and they've got a right to take her off, I suppose. It's a bit of the Michelle Payne situation. I think Michelle Payne kept the right. Yeah.
So what's the conclusion after talking to all of these women across various aspects of the industry, looking back at the history to now? Do you think things have improved for women? Is it easier for them?
Yeah, I think they've improved greatly, but I still think there's a long way to go. There are still people that are biased against women jockeys. You know, if you're in Adelaide, and I'm in Adelaide, and you've got Jamie Carr riding your horse, you've got just about the best jockey in Adelaide, you know. So, you know, she's outstanding. In the meet, you're not going to do much better than her. She tends to ride in provincials. So I think a lot of people are starting to recognise this now. I don't see enough women trainers. Still, I think that's an issue, despite the fact that Gay's a legendary trainer. I don't see enough women coming through the training ranks. I also interview Alana Williams in Perth, former top jockey turned trainer with her husband. But I find that probably one of the issues is the front office, if you like, and the boardroom. I think boards are getting better as of recent years, last year or two, actually, as you know. But I still think there are not enough women that are getting jobs as CEOs. There are a lot of women running country clubs, I spoke to someone who said, it might have even been you, I think, because it's a feature in the book in the media section. A lot of people run country clubs, but that's because they're working hard, and let's give it to the woman.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, but what a good question, wasn't it? But it's just... you know, I look at CEOs or major players in the big clubs, and I don't see women there. And You know, it's really a throwback to the 1950s if you think a woman can't be a CEO as well as a man. It's just laughable. So, so I still think...
Well, there hasn't yet been a female CEO of a major metropolitan race club in Australia. It's incredible. We're now in 2017. Other sports, we're seeing women taking lead roles on boards and the administrative side of things. And I guess Amanda Elliott's appointment to chair of the VRC is a big step towards that. But she's on the board side, not the CEO side.
It is. And Bodell Francis, a young woman in Adelaide, is very impressive. And I'm sure she's going to do some good stuff on the board side. But as you said... No CEOs in major clubs. It just, you know, I don't know whether they're not applying, but sometimes, and I suspect they are. But then again, they might be discouraged greatly to not apply, or you know, I mean, I haven't applied the job sometimes because I know I could do it, but people, I know they're not going to give it to me. So it might be one of those sorts of things where they go, I won't even bother. But they've definitely got to do that, and I can't believe that in this day and age, when women are running major companies around the world, women can't run race clubs. And there are so many... One of the things that gets me is that the amount of... When you get to Melbourne Cup at this type of time of the year, or, you know, autumn in Sydney or at Adelaide or Brisbane or wherever, we feature young, attractive women in the advertising everywhere. Basically, you know, it's a glamour shop, but they're trying to get women to go to race clubs, and yet they can't... It's no-brainer, is it? But if you're trying to get women...
Well, maybe they'd be in better touch with women if they had women making some of the key decisions. Being in touch with the demographic they're trying to target.
You want to get women to a racetrack. How about actually putting women in key positions who might know what women want to do when they come to a racetrack? It's just ridiculous. So there is that. I mean, I'm happy with the outcome of the book. I think it reads really well. You know, it's like any book, and I've written a novel 3 or 4 years back, but it's like any book. When you finish it, you go, I could have added more, and you sort of think, as I say, those couple of women pulled out, and then, since then I've thought of a couple of women that would have been really good at the back of the book, but hey, maybe there's a second book coming out down the track. Don't know. It would be nice to do another one in a couple of years to see if things have changed. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So it's released this month, October?
Yes, I think its launch date's tomorrow, October 1. It'll be...
Terrific. It'll be available everywhere?
Sorry?
Will it be available in most good bookstores, as you said, to borrow a great cliche?
It will be in good bookstores. You can, I've looked myself, you can Google it now and you'll find ways to buy it.
How much does it sell for, Shane?
Yeah, I think it's $29.95. Frustration of being a writer, of course, is I'm sure that... stores might go, we're going to sell to you for $24.95, and that'll probably come out of my profits, but you know, it's $29.95 full price, and I think there are discounts around the place, but it's not too expensive. You know, I've seen a couple of these books recently that sell for $39 and $40 and $45, so I think it's viable at that price. I'm trying to organise a few things at the moment to talk at functions for direct sales, which would be nice because I've done that before. It's always a good way to meet people and talk about horse racing, and no better time than the Spring Carnival.
Exactly right. Well, Shane, well done on achieving your goal of producing this book, because I know there's always a lot of hard work and it takes many years, and you've obviously encountered quite a number of setbacks along the way with publishers not being interested, so good on you for getting it over the line with Melbourne Books.
Thanks, Joe. Really appreciate it.
That's Shane McNally, the author of a book being released this month, Women in Australian Horse Racing, The Sport of Queens. Something a bit different for you this week on the program. Toowoomba played host to the Australian Interschool Equestrian Championships this week. There were more than 350 horses competing and 320 riders. One of those riders, hailing from the Northern Territory, had a fascinating story. He was riding a horse called Pelly, a little pony that travelled more than 3,500 kilometres from Darwin to compete at this major event. Her mother and father were Brumbies caught mustering with helicopters on a remote cattle station called Owen Pelly in the Northern Territory.
Believe me, she jumps like a stag, and her rider, Mac Beasy, loves her. This is her amazing story. I caught up with Mac and also his mum, Vicky.
This is a little pit pony by the name of Kelly, and her heritage is Brumby. Mac is the rider. Mac, tell us all about where Pelly came from.
Oh, Pelly came from, her parents came from Owen Pelly, which is a station in the Northern Territory.
And they were wild horses?
Yeah, they were wild Brumbies that originated from the Whaler.
Really?
Yeah.
She looks pretty quiet to me. She doesn't look like a Brumby at all.
No, we broke her in. She's homebroken in and homebred, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. But her mum was a bit cantankerous, wasn't she? She had to go back into the wild, is that right?
Yeah. She didn't want to be taught. She was pretty dangerous, so we had to let her back in the wild, yeah.
You love riding her, don't you?
Yeah, I love her, yeah.
What makes her so special for you?
Her ability to jump at her size, because she's really good at jumping. I just love her nature and her sweet attitude.
How high can she jump?
She can do 1.20 metre courses, and she's done a Youth Olympics FEI qualifier.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your ultimate ambition with Pelly? How high do you think she's going to be able to jump for you?
One day she might be able to do 1.30 metre, so fingers crossed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's showing you all the right signs at this point in time?
Yeah, she's going quite good, yeah.
How's she enjoying the experience here at this big competition?
Oh, I think she likes it. It's good weather, a lot better than the Territory's weather, so...
Not so hot?
Yeah, not so hot.
Yeah? Vicky, it's amazing what you can find in the wild and where it might lead you.
Totally. I mean, if I'd ever thought this horse could jump, whoever knows. And she just loves doing it. And she's just the most amazing athletic animal it's about.
How did you find her parents out in the wild?
She was caught for a place called Owen Pelly, and we had a station manager, and they pulled a bunch of horses in, drafted off what they thought were the old ones, and we were left with ones to choose from, and we drafted some of them off, put them on a truck and brought them home.
She doesn't look too wild these days.
No, but when you get her out in the show jump ring, the blood goes up and her ears prick up and she's like full of beans. But yeah, put her in a quiet little place and she returns back to her relaxed state.
She has a lot of the, what you could say, are typical attributes of a Brumby, doesn't she?
Yes. So she's sort of fine, a little bit like a thoroughbred. She's got fluffy legs, and we call them feathering on the legs. And she lives on virtually nothing. And she's got the most amazing hard feet. So she's really easy to keep and really easy to look after.
How high do you think she might jump eventually?
I don't know. I mean, she has done a 6 bar at a 1.50 metre. She's cleared 1.50 metre. And as Max said, he's jumped 1.25 metre 30, and he's really aiming to get her through 1.30 metre class clear.
How many hands high is she? She's jumping fences bigger than herself.
Yeah, they are. She's not quite 14.1.
Now, Vicky, you've got her in a pretty full-on bit here, a little Palom. Does she get on the steel a bit?
Only in the jump course. When she goes out, it's game on. At home in the paddock, she's just in a snaffle.
She pull a bit hard sometimes, does she, Mac?
Yeah, she does get a bit excited and she loves jumping. Yeah.
Nice jump. She can turn on a dime, can't she?
Oh, yeah. She's done a couple of barrel racing occasionally and she'll generally win that as well.
She's a versatile little pony, isn't she?
Oh, absolutely.
He's a nice rider, Mac.
Yeah, we're very lucky. Both kids just jumped on a horse and went riding.
How did you teach them to ride and how did you get this horse going?
We just put the kids on horses and they used to just ride out the back paddock having races and inventing games to play on horseback. And how we teach this pony? Same sort of thing. We didn't know that much about it. We were very new to the whole game and we just sort of read some books and put a bridle on, put a saddle on and then just started riding.
And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program. Special thanks to our guests this week, Ron Flatter, for his great preview of the Arc de Triomphe. The Beattie family from the Northern Territory, Shane McNally and Scott Darby from Darby Racing, wishing them all the best of luck in the Everest in Sydney. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.